Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, here with John Harry Sharan. And John is going to talk with us about past lives, future lives, and alternate realities. You know, many people want to know, have we lived before, or are we just imagining other times and places when we think about past lives? And we want to know how to tap into our soul memory to use that information and wisdom to make our current lives happier and more successful. Well, John Harry Sharan is here to enlighten us about all of that. And how are you doing today, John?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Thank you so much, Steve. It's a pleasure being with you again.
John, always good to talk with you, to learn from you, to be enlightened and inspired by you. And I've been thinking all day about this interview that I was going to do with you because I'm excited to learn about this. I'm a hypnotherapist who helps people get in touch with their past lives, but I'm always interested in learning more, especially from someone like you, someone who is the guru to so many gurus. You're the man behind the scenes. You're the guy who makes it all happen. You've got a wealth of information. So I'm really excited about this talk. And if it's all right with you, I want to jump right in.
Go right ahead, Steve. This is a fascinating topic.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's go ahead and set some groundwork. What do we mean when we talk about past lives? What is that?
I'm going to tell you what it commonly means. It actually means that we have lived before. It's tapping into that controversial area of reincarnation, being born again and again and again and living a life and then dying and living it again. And I think that's the kindergarten way of looking at it because there's a much better way to look at this. And our quantum physicists are now coming up with thoughts about it and how it really might work, in which they're saying, you know, it wasn't really a past life. It was an alternate life. And what is happening is we're living them all right now, but in different states of consciousness. And that, from the perspective of quantum physics, seemed to be a very different way of looking at it. But for simplicity, okay, for simplicity, we will talk about past lives like we have lived before. Now, people would ask me and say, well, how do you know that? My answer is, of course, damned if I know. I don't know that. I couldn't prove it. That's why if you were to, you know, there's this joke in this business where there's a guy who sells reincarnation insurance. And he says, if you want to come back as Caesar or Mark Anthony or Cleopatra or whoever it is, and it doesn't happen, I'll refund your money. Okay. So we have a lot of jokes about this. And I, in my study of this area and having been involved with it quite a lot, have met thousands of Cleopatras, and everybody is a Caesar. And everybody is this, and they were all kings and princesses and princesses and so forth. And I kept wondering, wasn't there anybody who was just an ordinary farmer? Wasn't there somebody who just was a regular man or woman in the street? And yes, but this is the perception they have because we are just looking at a very, very narrow framework. Now, let me tell you the way I started exploring this, and most people will relate to it. As a child, as a little boy, growing up, I would have these strange feelings of having been to a place before. And I think almost everybody does. Almost everyone. I bet you, Steve, have had the feeling of being somewhere before. And we talk about that as deja vu, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But maybe what if we really were there, then it means that we had to exist before this existence. And then people tell me, well, you know, you read it in a book or you saw it in a movie. And yes, there are nice little simplistic explanations, but they do not necessarily have their basis in anything that's real. So as a young guy growing up, I'd have these feelings of having been here, having been there, having known things before, having things that there was no way. I'm going to give you an example and show you what I mean. Now, to do that, I have to go back into the little village where I was born, which is a remote village at the northern coast of South America in a place that used to be called British Guyana. Now it's just called Guyana. It was a little village. I was alive. I was a little boy. And there were no radios in the village. There were no, I mean, that's how it was. Nobody had a radio. I remember when the first radio came to the village, about I was about 9 or 10 years old, and there was only one radio station in the entire country, and it only broadcasted for 3 or 4 hours a day. Okay, so we're taking away from this story the thought that I might have heard this on the radio. There was no library in the village. I had only been to the city maybe twice, and nobody would let a little country boy go to the library to get a book or two, so I couldn't have read it there. There were only 4 books in my dad's house, and I read them cover to cover, through and through. And then here is what happened. One day, I'm sitting in a hammock, lying in a hammock, and I started humming a song. And the song was this, John Brown's body lies a-moldering in the grave. And somebody says, what are you singing? And I said, yeah, this song, don't you know it? And this person looked at me as if I was crazy. And I thought I was nuts because I had never heard that song before. I knew the song called John Brown's Baby had a cold upon his chest. But John Brown's body, and I wouldn't have even thought of that. Years and years and years later, I'm now, you know, a little bit more civilized, if you will, and I'm exposed to a lot of things in the modern world. And I'm telling somebody about this story, how that came up, and there was no way in the world I could have known that song. I even hummed the tune. And the person says, well, you know, it's very simple. You may have heard it on the radio. And I said, there was no radio. Well, you guys didn't have a radio, but maybe your neighbors had a radio, and you heard it when you were passing by. I said, no, nobody in the entire village had a radio. That's how it was in those days. Oh, you must have read it somewhere. How would I read a song? I had no idea of how to read music. You know, I didn't even have a record player or anything. No radio, no record player, no anything. I just learned to play the harmonica. And so later on, they started thinking. They said, you know, you really knew that. Where did you learn it? And my answer again is, I have no idea, but I knew that. And so what I'm trying to say, Steve, is sometimes we get these feelings, and they tell us something. It's like the poem says, a certain murmur in the heart or a certain murmur in the soul tells of a world to be, as travelers hear the breakers roll before they reach the sea. There's something within us that whispers to us, you've been here, you're going through it again, and but in a different way, not exactly the same way. So it brings up the question, can we recall some of these things? I think that's the kind of thing people want to know. You walk into a room and you meet somebody, and for some reason, this person didn't do anything to you, but you cannot stand this person. You want to be away from him or her. You don't know why. Again, it's like the little ditty says, I do not like thee, Dr. Tell. The reason why, I know darn well, I do not like thee, Dr. Tell. And that's why I know darn well, or something to that sort. You meet somebody that you can't stand. You walk into the same room full of strangers, and you're immediately attracted or drawn to somebody that you have no idea why, and somebody you have never met before.
That happens a lot to people, and it's happened to me many times when I felt a connection. So you're saying that there's a potential past life connection there?
There is an energy system, and for now we're going to use the word or the words past life, because we may have known each other before. I know that a lot of people meet a lot of people. Take for example, another one closer to my being. You know of a friend, a mutual friend of ours by the name of Butch, a wonderful person with all kinds of connections and accomplishments and so forth. And from the first time we met, I had a feeling that I knew this guy before. We seemed to know each other's thoughts and what we'd like to do, how to go about doing things and so forth. And after years of doing this, we kept thinking, well, we must have been brothers because, you know, this is so comfortable. The same thing about people in marriages sometimes. They are drawn back together for lessons. You might say, well, what's the purpose in that? Well, again, I don't know the purpose. If I knew the purpose, it'll be like the cab driver I met in London once when I said, hey, you're a cab driver. Don't you know the street? He said, if I knew every bloody street in London, I'd be a brain surgeon. No, I don't know all these things. But I have a feeling that we know each other. It could be a relationship that's close to us. It could be families that seem to agree to come back on an adventure future. It could be, and I like to use this one, like a bunch of us folks were passing by this planet they call Earth. Now, don't ask me passing by in spaceships. I don't know. You don't even need spaceships if your mind can travel at will, if your spirit can go through anything. So we were passing by, and one of them said to me or to the others, "Hey, isn't that Earth down there? Hey, let's stop by and see what they're up to these days. They seem like they're getting ready to blow each other up and to destroy themselves. Maybe we could lend a hand. We'll just stop by for a few days." And guess what? They come. There's a group. They were born in different places in the world, because that's another story which could take days to tell. And they eventually get together and they form great giant groups that make progress for humanity. And they say, "Okay, we got that done. Now let's go." But a day to them or a week to them would be like a lifetime to us. And many truths are told as fiction. I'm an avid lover of Star Trek, especially the Next Generation. And there is a show there called The Light Within, which shows where the captain lived an entire lifetime in a week. Now, if our spirits are boundless, and we can travel throughout the universe, isn't it possible, just possible, that many of us know each other and have met before? And so when we talk about past lives, who knows what the important, what the significant connections were?
That's a very good point. Now, John, some people have the idea that this concept that we have of time is not linear. In fact, that there is no past and no future, and everything's kind of overlapped and happening all at the same quote-unquote time, if you will. What would you say to those concepts?
That does not contradict anymore with this example that I gave the other day, which is I could be watching a TV channel right now, okay? Let's, for the sake of argument, pick any number, channel 33. I have no idea what that is.
Okay.
Now, where is channel 34?
It should be right next to it.
But I'm only seeing channel 33, right?
Right.
Where is channel 9? Where is channel 50? I am just focused on channel 33. But all the others exist at the same time. You see the point? All I have to do, Steve, is just turn the dial or press the remote, and I'll jump from one reality, which is channel 33, to another one, which could be 9.
Okay, very good point. So you're saying that potentially we could jump to them, or we can somehow access information from them?
Let's say the accessing of the information, because the one we're involved right now with, too, is we might just be the figment in the creator's imagination. You know, how do I know that I am not just a thought in the fantastic brain, if you want to use such mundane words, of God? You know, I was once on a TV show. I think it was CBS Point of View. And the fellow who was interviewing me, he said, "But John, how do you know that?" And I said, "I'm not sure how I know it, except I know it." He says, "But can you prove it?" I said, "Well, I'll ask you a question. Can you prove to me that you aren't home right now, you're in bed, and you're sleeping, and you're vividly dreaming that we're doing an interview on TV?"
What do you say to that?
He immediately says, "Oh, blah, 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 blah. We'll go to a commercial and we'll be back short."
Because so he had no proof. He had no proof of that.
No, because he couldn't prove that he wasn't dreaming me. So how do we know that we are not dreaming another life, or another life is dreaming us right now? As my old friend Deepak Chopra is fond of saying, he says, you know, when we wake up from waking up, we're going to understand a lot more things. So there is this question about where does one start? Is it all happening at one time? Quantum physics. And remember I said that I was trained as a scientist. Chemistry, math, physics, those were my background, my playing grounds, so to say. And quantum physics now telling us that this idea that I'm talking about could be much closer to the truth than sequential lifetimes. And getting back to the thought you brought up there, Steve, if time is not linear, it's just simultaneous. It means everything is happening at one time, just like I explained with a television. television set. Or here's a simpler one. Take a book, 400 pages of adventure, or whatever it is, a big book, and you look at it. The entire story, beginning, middle, end, everything exists in that 1 second in that physical book. Now, you can choose, if you start reading the book, to stop at one point and go back and check. You're at chapter 7. You go back to chapter 2 and reread that again, and you will have a faint memory that you had done that before. Or if you want to ruin your story, if it's a novel, you could jump right ahead. You can go from page 100 to page 300 to page, but the entire thing, like in a DVD, the entire movie exists at one split second in time on that DVD. All you have to do is use the correct tools to access any part of that. Now, here's the thing about it. People say, well, why don't I remember all of them? Have you ever been into a room where everybody is talking at the same time and they want your attention?
Yes.
Okay, that's not a fun thing. It's not fun because you don't hear anybody and you want to get out of there. So if you were to access every lifetime or so-called lifetime all together, the noise would be so much, our physical structure will be so much, it will be like going into a room. Well, this happens. You go to the mall where they have televisions. There are 100 televisions. If each of them carried it, why do you think each one doesn't carry a different station? Because the person watching will get very confused and leave and won't buy. So most of them will be showing the same picture. Mm-hmm. See what I'm trying to say here?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. Now, John, I want you to enlighten me a little bit about future lives, because when we get into that whole concept, people start thinking about, you know, winning the lottery and knowing who they're going to marry and knowing what career would be right for them. A lot of practical and kind of maybe people can get a little greedy with it, but there are a lot of applications to it, a lot of implications when we start talking about future lives. And we start thinking about movies such as Back to the Future, where the future was changed every time Marty got in the time machine and did something differently. The future, as he moved back to it, was different because of something he had done. So there are a lot of thoughts that come up for people, myself included, when we talk about future lives and how we can possibly see them and so forth. So would you spend some time just enlightening us about future lives?
Sure, and I'm glad you brought up that McFly guy and Back to the Future, because when that came out years ago, I just loved to watch it because I'm fascinated by this time thing. I think it was Wells who wrote The Time Machine and going back. But there is this paradox in time. The one you just mentioned, you can go back. Every little action you take changes something, which then changes our personal future. Okay, here's the paradox of time. Suppose I went back to 5 generations ago and found my great 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 grandfather, and I'm a little boy. Well, I'm a teenager, and he and I are walking around something, and I am able to meet him, and I said, "Come on, let's go for a ride in the car, or let's use a horrible one." I go back, and I through accident killed my great great grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Would I be here right now? Would it have changed my entire future? The answer is, I wouldn't exist as I am right now, maybe in some other way, I don't know. But if my father had died before I was born, if my grandfather had, I would not have existed right now. That's easy to understand. What about if there are multiple things, like those multiple pages of the book I told you about? I mentioned that we could, we are at chapter 10, and we can go back to chapter 7 and review it, but we could also jump ahead into chapter 15, which, so to say, is the future, and see what's there. You see, we could do that. It won't make as much sense to us because we skipped a whole bunch of chapters in this thing, although it is, you know, it's not dependent very much on each one is an integral unit, but they're connected together in such a way that the entire thing needs our entire awareness and our attention. So what I'm saying is, perhaps in one situation, and this has been proposed by a bunch of people, like Richard Bach talked about it this way, another great writer, you might have heard of her, she passed away a few years ago, Ruth Montgomery, who wrote about the world before the world after. She brought in the walk-in phenomenon, and she used to be a reporter at the White House and got into this. They thought she was nuts. She was a friend of Jean Dixon, wrote the first book about Jean Dixon, and the great psychic of the 1960s and 70s. Well, I got to know Ruth Montgomery very well, and we talked about some of these things, and she mentioned, guys like Richard Bach and many people who study this, Brad Steiger, that, hey, John, perhaps it's not a straight line thing, just like you said earlier, Steve. Perhaps it's not linear. Perhaps right now, there is a John who exists somewhere else, who doesn't really know Steve, who is doing his own thing, whatever that thing is. And now we're going to get into a little bit more of a complex situation. Just as we can move back in time, it is also very possible that we can move forward in time. But which one are we moving to, since we do not consciously have the data of going forward? We could, where do we want to go? So we're really doing mind travel instead of time travel, because time becomes irrelevant. No respectable scientist since the early, the mid or early 20th century ever referred to space and to time really as two separate things. They talked of space-time. And guys like Einstein says, what we used to believe, or what I was even taught in school, that a straight line is a straight line. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line, and that light travels in straight lines. And now we're finding out that light bends. We're finding strange things about space. For example, a mile of space around the sun is different from a mile of space around the Earth or on the Earth. And if our scientists are saying, 2 + 2 may not even be 4, it makes us think that, there's so many things. It comes up with what Shakespeare said in his play Hamlet. He had one of the characters says, there are many things in heaven and earth, Horatio, that our philosophy dreams not of. And so this whole thing exists. I couldn't go back and kill my grandfather now and exist. But in another existence, if there are infinite existences, there might be a possibility that there is a John who did exactly that and ended up not existing as John in that reality. Now you might say, yeah, I understand that. If there were 10, I could understand that. But guess what? There are infinite possibilities. That means I may exist in an infinite number of ways and methods and bodies and systems and timelines and so forth. Now, into the late 20th century, some books came out called The Many World Theory. They are different universes, split universes, alternate universes, and the study of time and space is something very exciting, especially for me, who used to think, have we lived before? Are we going to live again?
That is very well put. I mean, I've wondered that myself too. Have we lived before? And that gets me to the one of the questions I had also, which is alternate realities. Now, are you talking about, when you talk about these different possibilities dimension-wise and so forth, is that what alternate realities are?
Yes, exactly. And different states of consciousness could access these alternate realities. Now, here's the situation. Richard Bach told me, he said, somewhere, I don't remember, he says, once he was riding in this bus, and all of a sudden, it was a dreary day, one of those damp, dreary December days, and everybody was grumpy, and he was riding in this bus, I don't know where he was going, and he said, all of a sudden, he started feeling great. He started humming a tune, and he started smiling, and there was no physical reason for him to do that. And then he said, but guess what it was? He says, an aspect of myself, which means an alternate Richard Bach, was sitting at the sides of an Ionian hill, that's a Greek hill, playing on his flute as he watched his sheep. And he says, I could almost see the scene and knew that I had tapped into an alternate existence. I always wondered why he and I and a few others of us have this tremendous fascination for bagpipes. No, I don't even look Scottish, okay? You don't believe me? Go on the internet. Look at me. Is that a Scottish guy? No, I don't look Scottish. I have been to Scotland once, but in a book I wrote called Morning Has Been All Night Coming, there are two chapters about Scotland. And it's because within me there's this love of the bagpipes. I first heard it when I was about 11 years old, and the Queen's Own Buffs, or one of the bagpipe regiment, came to Guyana, which was British at that time. I'd cut classes to listen to these guys play. And so whenever I hear the sound of a bagpipe, I stop all I'm doing and I stand still and I say, you know, you should like Indian movie music. You should like cowboy songs. You like those things. Where did this bagpipe come from? Until one day, you know, Richard said, he says, you know, I freeze when I hear the sound of the bagpipe. And I think I know where it came from. I remember. Now, this is a guy. When we're talking about this thing, these things, I know there are some people who are going to say, John is nuts and all he's talking about is nuts. Sometimes I think so too, so I apologize. But Richard Bach is one of the world's top authors. They've made movies of his book. They've done all kinds of things with him. Was one of the publishing phenomena of the 20th century. This guy, quite something. And he said, I stood there on this little hill. I saw the village below where I belonged to, and I looked across the waters, and I saw these longboats coming. And you know what they were? They were Vikings, and I knew right away they were going to destroy the entire village. So I tried to warn the villagers, and some of us got out of there right away. Could he have been making this thing up? And even if he did, can we prove that that didn't happen? Now, how do we use this kind of stuff to help us? I imagine that's a question a lot of people would want to know.
I think so. I think that's a very practical question, and people, though they're fascinated by theoretical knowledge, and in this case, factual knowledge from the spirit world that you have, it still kind of remains theory in their minds until they understand how to put it into practical terms. So I'd like to look at that next.